This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by an extraordinary leader in healthcare, Phil Schaefer. Phil's going to talk today about his career, about where he's most focused today, what he's most excited about, and a lot more, and what trends he's watching in healthcare. Phil, can you take a moment and tell us a bit about yourself and your career?
Sure, Scott. I'm happy to. I started out as a respiratory therapist when I was a young buck and entered into management right out of school and worked my way up in clinical departments to where I was managerially responsible for about six clinical areas. After doing that for a number of years, I transitioned over to the corporate side and became the lead for marketing and planning for a three-hospital system in Central Illinois. That was Broman Healthcare at the time. After doing that for a while, I transitioned to Southern Illinois and started out being the strategic planner and lead strategist for Southern Illinois Healthcare, which at the time was a six-hospital system. In 2006, the medical malpractice crisis became a disruptive innovator for a lot of healthcare systems, especially in Illinois, and I was asked to start a medical group, and that medical group was employed physicians and APPs. When I left that position, really about 2 years ago, it was a 350 provider organization in a rural market that would have made that organization's medical group about the eighth largest in St. Louis and about the 12th largest in Chicago, where it located there. I effective at the end of last month, transitioned full time into consultancy. I'm located now closer to family in Central Illinois, and that's been a good transition for me. I now am focused on how does healthcare in the United States take a perfect storm, which we are undergoing, and transition to a more innovative, nimble system that is more cost-effective, customer-centric, and addresses things that are very important, such as social determinants of health.
Fantastic. What a fabulous career. And people don't realize this, but Central Illinois is just an absolutely wonderful part of the country. So it's phenomenal. And I've spent time at Broman, I've spent time in Southern Illinois, so I've seen all those places. So just phenomenal. Tell us a little bit about, you know, when you look at the labor trends, the labor challenges, recruiting physicians, recruiting people to Central and Southern Illinois, how difficult is that today? What does that look like today in terms of, you know, and because it's a good, it's a microcosm for the rest of the country outside of the biggest cities. What does recruiting and staff look like in Central and Southern Illinois? How difficult is that?
Well, we had very strong success in recruiting very, very highly qualified physicians to Southern Illinois. And what we learned very early on is that people weren't going to come to Southern Illinois because of the wonderful ties that I wore or how nice of people we were. They wanted to be in a place that was safe and nurturing for their families. But just as importantly, they wanted to be part of a collegial group that was attractive and supportive to them. The old adage that no eagle wants to soar with turkeys is very much true. And so we had good luck in not only recruiting, but also retaining. The challenges came when COVID hit and the financial pressures of COVID. A second challenge was that there were some specialties for which there just aren't enough graduates coming out of residency or fellowship for those specialties. ENT is a great example of that. We had great difficulty recruiting ENTs for quite a while. And so that led us to look at ways that we could partner to bring greater access to care to the region. Southern Illinois University and the medical school in Springfield has been a wonderful partner, but things got waylaid a little bit because of COVID and other priorities such as financial pressures and things like that. And that, Scott, to me today is the greatest challenge. And that is with the financial pressures that healthcare systems are undergoing, is the employed physician model going to be the sustainable model going forward? And I think there's probably going to be some models that we don't anticipate today, and it's going to be great to be part of watching that occur.
But this point on the employed physician, hospitals have become very reliant on integrated delivery systems, the employed physician, And now they've got all this competition for these physicians from private equity driven, you know, funded efforts from, you know, CVS and Optum and others. What's your sense of that? Is that going to create so much inflation given that and the shortages of these physicians to start with? Is that going to create so many challenges for hospital employed models? What's some of your feelings or thoughts on what you're seeing there?
Well, I think that's very real, Scott. You're right on point. It is not the same as it used to be, where you were competing with other healthcare systems or you were competing with private groups. No, today, the competition is very real and it has very deep pockets. And they're looking to create a different type of integrated system where they can integrate not only physicians and access to primary care, but also pharmacy benefits management and other things to enhance the financial model. Hospitals that cling to the old model where we employ you and you will do what we ask you to do have traditionally not done well long-term and won't do well in the future. The key for corporate medicine, say the Optums of the world, CVS, if you will, is going to be, can they engage the physicians in a model that is collegially supportive and that they feel that they have some autonomy in running the group? And time will tell if that can occur.
No, it's really, really true. You've had a great healthcare career, from therapist to leader to now consulting. What advice would you give to somebody trying to have a career in healthcare and have a career that they love?
Scott, I'm still mentoring several people who aspire to higher levels of leadership. And I would tell them that it is not for the faint of heart right now. We're seeing so many organizations downsize their leadership teams that there are a lot of very qualified and very experienced people who are on the street looking for new opportunities. And so the first advice I give anyone is make yourself the compelling candidate. Develop your skill set so that you clearly add value in a way that others might not. Be open to innovation. Talk about the basic skills of leadership, including active listening, strategic thinking, organizing projects, and inspiring those who you'll be working with. You'll never hear me say, for instance, that somebody works for me. We work together because we're all focused on the mission of the organization and the patients that we serve.
This concept of nobody works for each other, it's so critical to the world that we're in, isn't it? And how you work, you side by side with people, and my reporting responsibilities, the ultimate decision, somebody being promoted or not, getting a raise or not. But at the end of the day, if the feeling is you work for me, this is not a sustainable model for most people, is it?
Well, it certainly doesn't work at home, does it, Scott? Right at the house that she works for you or he works for you, that is not sustainable. No one wants to be told what to do. They want to be engaged in charting a course and then identifying what their role is in helping achieve that course. And so don't do things to people. That's a good idea. Engage them in the decision. That's a wonderful idea. And you can't communicate enough. We've kind of gotten away from in-person communication with COVID and working remotely and things like that. Time to re-engage that and to do that thing that we used to call talking and actively listening to each other.
No, it's so true. And this concept of telling people what to do at home, I certainly can't tell anybody in any part of the family what to do at home. I get told what to do, and it is what it is. And I bristle at it, but I certainly am not able to tell anybody what to do any place. It just is. It's a sad thing, Phil, but it is what it is. I think it's just the reality of life. And you're absolutely right on human relationships.
And, you know, there's another, Scott, and that is that when senior leadership and the C-suite come together to chart a course, there often will not be unanimity of opinions. There may be divergent opinions, but it's important to walk out of the meeting with a course that we all agree to and that we openly support. So that collegiality, but also cohesiveness, leads you not to look for unanimous decisions, but leads you to look for consensus, and that being defined perhaps as no one having strong opposition.
No, I think that's exactly right. And you see this. There's a concept of in negotiation. People that could argue and negotiate But at the end of the day, walk away laughing together or smiling together or positive after they've made their decision, after they've wrestled through whatever the ideas are, whatever the arguments are, but be able to then walk out of the room as colleagues, so important. I think that's exactly right. Phil, I want to thank you again for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Again, Phil Schaefer, brilliant leader, terrific person. Thank you for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been good to talk with you.